The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour I'll be reading to you from, well, let's see, first of all, Money Magazine for May of this year, and then if time allows, a little something I found online, maybe a little thing from AARP Magazine. And the programming today is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. And now, this first article is from Money Magazine is Vicki Robin and the Fire Movement. Vicki Robin had no idea she'd become a millennial icon. The 72-year-old co-author of the 1992 bestseller Your Money or Your Life was recuperating from a hip replacement early last year when a young man she'd met at a sustainability event months prior told her she was popular on a Reddit forum about financial independence. At the time, she was confined to the pull-out couch of her Whidbey Island, Washington living room, with its view of the Cascade Mountains and Puget Sound. So she had plenty of time to explore the online community, where, to her surprise, she discovered she was something of a celebrity. "It was stunning," Robin says. "I'm an elder in a community I didn't know existed." Robin's fans belong to an impassioned, mostly millennial movement known online as the FIRE community, or simply FIRE. It's an acronym that stands for Financial Independence, Retire Early. Adherents track down to the penny where their money goes, mindful of how much each purchase will really cost, with the idea that dollar amounts should be equated to hours of life energy, in Robin's words. So, if you make $300 a day and want to buy a $100 pair of shoes, you ask yourself, are those shoes really worth nearly a third of a day of your precious time on earth? As the first part of the acronym suggests, the goal of the movement is to gain financial independence, meaning you're no longer relying on paid employment to keep afloat. It's no coincidence that the ranks of FIRE followers are spreading like, well, wildfire right now. The stock market has been very good to investors in recent years, especially to those who understand the magic of compound interest. Unemployment is low, and opportunities to earn extra money in the sharing economy are plentiful. Add the do-it-yourself spirit of a generation that can learn anything on YouTube, and you've got ripe conditions for a movement. What's more, we all know that a traditional retirement is a thing of the past. No one works for 40 years at the same company anymore and retires to a front porch with a gold watch and a pension to show for it. So instead of tweaking the traditional model around the edges, these young people are saying, let's just blow up the whole concept of career and retirement and start from scratch. The Financial Independence subreddit has more than 350,000 subscribers around the world. A directory on the blog Rockstar Finance counts nearly 1,600 personal finance blogs, many dedicated to early retirement. Grant Sabatier, 32, was living with his parents in 2010 and eking out a meager post-college existence when he came across Your Money or Your Life. "It completely changed my life and trajectory," he says. "It is still my favorite book of all time." Sabatier, who says he amassed a fortune of more than $1 million in 5 years, primarily through lucrative web design side gigs, founded Millennial Money, an online community dedicated to personal finance, education, and entrepreneurship. To say Robin is an unlikely financial guru is an understatement. She didn't spend any time on Wall Street, and she seems more inclined to pass along her favorite kombucha recipe than the name of a favorite mutual fund. She speaks not in the empathetic bursts of Susie Orman, but in the melodic voice she uses to sing soprano in a local choir. Her look these days is Golden Girls chic, and while she would seem like a blast to live with, she lives alone above two tenants whose rent more than covers her housing expenses. Having paved the original fire path decades ago, Robin hasn't worked for a traditional paycheck in 50 years. After stints as an actress and in film production in New York City, she parlayed an inheritance at age 23 into a modest income that sustained a groovy 1970s lifestyle in which she lived in an intentional community, which is kind of like a commune but less marginalized and more centered around mutual values. The sharing economy before it was the sharing economy, she says. There, Robin taught herself practical skills from auto repair and hunting to making booze from dandelions, a DIY strategy to become self-reliant by acquiring know-how that would enable her to tread lightly and travel cheaply through life. It was only when people began asking how she lived on so little money that Robin realized she had a story to tell. She and her friend Joe Dominguez, with whom she had lived in the intentional community, teamed up to give financial education workshops around the country. They spread their money values, including planet-friendly frugality, the old-fashioned way in those pre-internet days. Dominguez, who retired from a brief career on Wall Street at age 31, gave the lectures, and Robin produced them. The two used their experiences to co-write the first version of Your Money or Your Life in the early 1990s, a process, she says, took just 9 months. The book first hit shelves in 1992 when she was 47. The revised second edition of Your Money or Your Life is due out this spring. Robin wanted to write something for today's millennials whose prospects, she worried, were crimped by student debt. She had already begun working on the new draft when she discovered that the original still lived on Reddit. Had she known that, she says, she might not even have embarked on the reboot. It was providential, she says. Your Money or Your Life takes readers through a 9-step program intended to transform your relationship with money. It's not about becoming rich. It's about figuring out how much is enough. Once you buy less stuff, you won't need nearly as much money to sustain your lifestyle as you previously did. Wisely invest the difference and wait until the interest thrown off by your portfolio exceeds your expenses. That's the crossover point, Robin writes, and once you reach it, you can piece out of the paid workforce decades ahead of schedule. The FIRE movement looks at this text as a Bible of sorts, one that legitimizes its followers' path to financial success and offers freedom from being a corporate drone and ultimately a more satisfying life, a life typically sought after by the 65 and older crowd. It sounds great. Who wouldn't want to be in retirement bliss by 40, learning how to make his or her own version of dandelion wine? But is it realistic? It's a very different world today than it was in 1992 when Robin's book came out. Back then, government bonds, long a favorite source of retiree income, threw off a respectable yield of around 8%. But interest rates haven't been that plump for a long time, and the 2018 version of the book acknowledges this new reality. Instead, Robin writes about a favorite investment of the FIRE folks, low-cost index mutual funds, or exchange-traded funds, ETFs. She also suggests buying real estate, as she has done. In particular, you should consider small duplexes, triplexes, and quads, where you can occupy one unit yourself and have your mortgage covered by your tenants. This approach isn't far-fetched, but it does come with certain risks, according to financial advisors. In order to retire at any age, a general rule of thumb holds that you need to save up at least 25 times your annual expenses. Say you need $50,000 to live on each year, you'll need to accumulate around $1.25 million in order to withdraw 4% from it each year in perpetuity, adjusted upward for inflation. Robin's calculations assume a 4% withdrawal rate with a caveat. Remember, this is a general example and not specific financial instructions. If the stock market posts strong gains, you can wind up with more money than you started with, even as you withdraw your inflation-adjusted living expenses of 4% each year. But if the stock market tanks and you are withdrawing on a declining balance, then you face the risk of running out of money. The 4% rule is a solid method, but it came from research that assumed a traditional retirement of no longer than 30 years, says John Salter, a professor of financial planning at Texas Tech University and a partner in the planning firm Ivensky and Katz Foldy's Financial Wealth Management. All bets are off if your retirement lasts 60 years. You'll have to watch your withdrawals closely and dial back your spending, potentially significantly, if the market declines, he says. Early retirees also have a longer runway to experience inflation. Prices for regular goods and services roughly double every 25 years, so a 30-year-old early retiree will see general prices rise fourfold over his or her lifetime, Salter says. Medical costs rise at an even sharper rate. In other words, you had better hope that stocks continue posting inflation-beating gains. To be sure, there are many subcultures within the FIRE movement that all have their own spending goals and takes on Robin's prescriptions. Some are more drastic than others. There's regular FIRE for all those people who want to exit the rat race early but might like to occasionally enjoy a good restaurant on the way or hire a plumber to fix their broken toilet instead of breaking out the wrench themselves. There's also barista FIRE for those who might need or want to supplement their savings with a part-time job at a place like Starbucks for the health insurance, a key necessity for early retirees. On the extreme ends, there are the frugal FIRE adherents who base a lot of their ideology on the writings of Pete Adonai, a.k.a. Mr. Money Mustache, a FIRE hero who in 2011 started blogging about his retirement at age 30 from his short career as a software engineer and the frugality and DIY spirit that contributed to his success. Adonai, now 43, is so prominent he's inspired a loose network of camps in his name. Devotees gather in spots like Gainesville, Florida and Seattle for Camp Mustache, where talk of churning credit cards for points mixes with the traditional camp activities like archery and bonfires. Adonai himself attends the annual Seattle retreat. The $425 tickets for this year's event, to be held over Memorial Day weekend, sold out last November in less than a minute, as if they were for a Taylor Swift concert. On the other end of the spending spectrum, you have fat FIRE for people who want to spend a healthy amount in retirement, maybe because they want to keep living in an expensive city. They have higher savings goals, starting around $2 million, according to a young fat FIRE devotee in New York City. Despite their different strains, FIRE walkers have more in common than not. You're kind of an oddball in our society if you make a lot of money and choose not to spend it, says Darrow Kirkpatrick, a former software engineer who retired early at the relatively ripe age of 50. FIRE folks love meeting up in real life so they can geek out on stuff they might not feel comfortable sharing with friends or family. You know you've found your tribe when you can call Roth IRA conversion laddering beautiful and have a sea of faces nod earnestly in agreement, as happened at a recent FIRE meetup in New York City. Of course, reaching financial independence is only part of the equation. Once you get there, you have to figure out what to do with the rest of your life, how you'll spend a retirement that could last 50 or 60 years. That's a whole lot of downtime, and most people planning on retiring early aren't thinking about the looming void. The vast majority are focused on numbers and calculations, says Grant Sabatier. He's now a business partner with Robin in the new website YourMoneyOrYourLife.com. He believes many FIRE followers neglect the spiritual transformation that can happen when you change your relationship with money. The community remains overwhelmingly male and is heavy on those who naturally organize their thoughts in spreadsheets, like tech types and engineers. Some look down from their huge pile of savings on the masses who, the perception goes, mindlessly go through the motions in their day jobs so they can mindlessly spend on weekends. Missing is any acknowledgement of the privilege embedded in the ability to save 50 to 75% of your income to begin with. The FIRE movement, to a large extent, remains a culture of very entitled white men who are very proud of themselves when it wasn't much of a stretch for them anyway, says Emma Petty, 27, a writer based in Portland, Oregon, who retired last year at 26 after making successful real estate investments. Many FIRE followers, she says, are already high earners who disdain all the Midwest minions who can't get out in front of their truck loan. Another unforeseen hazard. Some FIRE bros flame out months after pulling the plug on their jobs. When you're clocking 14 or 18-hour days at a startup, it's easy to fetishize a life of home brewing and farming in bucolic Vermont or rural Virginia. But actually, home brewing and farming can be lonely and backbreaking work, says Patty, who knows people who have had to publicly walk back their much-celebrated retirements when the reality fell short of their fantasy. That's the problem with just trying to win, she says. So, how do you fill all those decades when you no longer have to work for pay? It's not an idle question. There's a body of research linking early retirement to premature death. We think it's not about taking Social Security per se, but it's about the act of retiring, says Maria Fitzpatrick, an associate professor at Cornell University, who found that men who retire at age 62 have an increased early mortality risk of about 20%. Although her research isn't on the exact FIRE demographic, after all, it focuses on those who retired at 62 as opposed to 32 or 42. Some FIRE followers are well aware of it. Adani says retiring very early makes it easier to live a longer life than people who retire in their early 60s. In many ways, FIRE followers are forging into uncharted territory. We don't have any data on whether extreme early retirees have a tendency to get sicker or even die earlier in greater numbers than their traditionally employed peers, whether they burn out from all the leisure time and return to paid work, or whether they instead live decades in fulfilled contentment, nurturing their passions and giving back to their communities. Tanya Hester, a FIRE follower who leans toward the frugal strain of the movement and retired late last year at age 38 from her career as a consultant for political and social causes, realizes she's in a privileged position. I feel like one of the luckiest people to ever live, and if I can't use some of it to help others, it will feel like a waste, she says. She and her husband, who live in the North Lake Tahoe area of California, volunteer at the local Humane Society and plan to start teaching financial basics in their community. For her part, Robin gives back by investing in local businesses. Aside from using royalties to pay for cancer treatments in the mid-2000s, she says she's given away a significant portion of the money she's made over the years from her bestseller, and she still thinks our society places too much stock in paid work. She knows the firewalkers have an uphill battle, both in their personal finance goals and in the cultural norms they're bucking. Still, she wishes the best for those who would follow in her footsteps. If they can endure the identity crisis, then they are the folks who are woke, and they can take action, she says. There's another generation, hallelujah, that's adopting these values. This article was written by Elizabeth O'Brien. Here's an example of one of the FIRE followers and how she worked out her program. This is a 39-year-old flight attendant landing an early retirement. Just 5 years ago, Bianca De Valerio was struggling through a divorce and the last of three short sales that nearly wiped out her savings during the financial crisis. Today, the Chicago flight attendant projects she'll reach financial independence within a year. That is, she calculates she will have saved enough so she won't need to work for the rest of her life. I am in disbelief that I'm where I am, says De Valerio, 39, but the numbers don't lie, and I work my butt off to get here. De Valerio is a FIRE devotee, but she doesn't plan to actually retire when she reaches financial independence. She loves her job too much for that. But she does hope to be choosier about her shifts and take extended breaks to travel and volunteer. The boxed wine mentality. De Valerio saves three-quarters of her $75,000 flight attendant salary, plus she makes additional income from her side hustles, including selling furniture that she refurbishes on Craigslist and eBay. She says she lives on roughly $20,000 a year, And no, as she writes in her blog, it's not because she has a sugar daddy footing her bills. So how does she do it? For starters, she owns her small studio apartment outright, and it's in a not-so-fancy part of town. She has no children, and she has trimmed the fat out of her budget, literally. Di Valerio eats mostly vegetarian with some fish. Once she discovered how much of her paycheck went to Whole Foods, she stopped going there and now shops for groceries at Aldi and Costco instead. Bottled wine went out, too, in favor of the cheaper boxed version. It helps that her hobbies are free or low cost. Hiking is one of my greatest joys, and that costs nothing, she says. Thanks to her job, she can fly free to many destinations, slashing her vacation costs. Low-cost trips as a volunteer help her save money also. The magic number. Many folks go overboard when they start down the fire path, Di Valerio says, slashing their spending to the bone. You could wind up being miserable for months or years, she says, and if you get hit by the proverbial bus or get a terminal diagnosis, then your sacrifices will have been for nothing. So Di Valerio says it's good to recalibrate and find a comfortable groove, as she did last year. In 2016, she boosted her earnings by setting a monthly goal of 100 flight hours, compared with her prior average of around 60. Flight attendants are paid only for hours actually in the air. They're not compensated for layovers or delays. This boosted her pay by 40%, and she banked all of it. While that decision helped turbocharge her savings, it also took a toll. She came to dread the start of the month, imagining all the hotel rooms that she'd be occupying away from her dog and her boyfriend at the time. Flying so much is also hard on the body, with erratic sleep and eating schedules. Di Valerio eased her flying goals last year and loosened her budget a bit. After all, she says, you don't want to frugal yourself into a corner. That is, you don't want to reach financial independence through draconian means, because that could lock you into a low spending rate that makes you miserable. Her goal is to amass a portfolio that throws off $2,000 a month for life, a comfortable amount for her that she expects to achieve next year if the market doesn't tank. The point of this is to thrive in your life, she says, and not feel like you're missing out. Now, while we're on the subject of money, here from AARP Magazine is a little money saver exam, your family financial exam. When it comes to knowledge of close relations and money, do you have the goods? Ask yourself these true-false questions to find out. 1. About 60% of married couples in the U.S. make their household financial decisions as a team. True or false? The answer, false. Only about 37% of couples share financial decision-making equally. 2. Middle-income parents average $37,000 a child on child care and school costs per kid before that child heads off to college. True or false? Answer, true. In 1960, the amount was a mere $4,000 per child in today's dollars. 3. On average, parents think kids should get their first allowance at age 7. True or false? 3. An answer. False. The typical parent wants to hold out until age 10. 4. Roughly 29% of women in dual-income marriages make more money than their spouses. True or false? True. That's up from approximately 16% in 1981. 5. Parents think it's more important to talk about funding elder care than their adult children do. True or false? False. In a survey, 74% of kids said it was important, compared with 52% of parents. 6. An average family in the top 10% of wealth in the United States receives an inheritance of about $367,000. True or false? 6. True. Meanwhile, families at the median level of wealth in the U.S. report an average inheritance of around $16,000. 7. The average payout from a visit from the Tooth Fairy in 2017 was $4.13. True or false? True. It's even higher in the West, an average of $6. 8. A family in the middle of the U.S. income range spends about one-third of its budget on housing. True or false? True. Low-income families spend approximately 41%, and high-income families spend closer to 30%. 9. 23% of grandparents help pay for their grandchildren's education. True or false? Answer, false. About 53% do, but 23% contribute toward their grandkids' health and dental bills. 10. A firstborn child will probably end up as the highest-earning sibling in the family. True or false? Answer, true. Eldest children are also more likely to work in management when they grow up. Now, here's an editorial from AARP President Eric J. Schneiderwund. He's also the National Volunteer Spokesperson. He says, it's time for each of us to make our voices heard. These are the times that try men's souls, Thomas Paine's words written more than two centuries ago in the darkest hours of our country's struggle for freedom, are certainly apropos today. As I travel the nation and conduct biweekly teletown hall events, listening to and learning from AARP members and our cherished volunteers, I hear their anguish. They grieve for the innocent children murdered in school shootings. They ache for the women subjected to sexual harassment and worse. They grow anxious over reports of elected officials abusing the public trust. Each of us feels every tragedy acutely, and we often find a personal connection. My son is a high school teacher, a point of pride that now rides on a current of anxiety. I ask myself, and our members ask me, what should I do? How do I help make sure these horrible things don't keep happening? Right now, I look to the women and children. There's the brave eloquence of women in the Me Too movement who are breaking the code of silence surrounding sexual harassment, and there are the young students from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, who are raising their collective voices and serve as an inspiration to us all. They speak straight from the heart, and their courage has already had a tremendous impact. Don't remain on the sidelines. Whatever your beef, whatever you champion, please speak up. We need more constructive dialogue. As my time as AARP president grows short, I urge each of you to do what I intend to do over the coming months. Research the issues, examine the facts. Above all, search your heart and mind and resolve to make a difference. The next steps are easy. Write a few words to your newspaper or your state or national legislators. Go to community meetings and town halls. Lend your voice to social media conversations. Show up. Your participation is vitally important this year. 35 senators and 36 governors are up for election in November, along with every member of the U.S. House of Representatives, and more than 6,000 seats in state legislatures, 82% of the nation's total, will be decided. I implore you to register and vote. You can change things. Like the women's and children's voices, your voice has power. Do not be silent. And that's all the time we've got today for Modern Maturity. But I hope you'll come back and listen next time and that you've enjoyed today. I'm Florence Nash, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and our programming is generously underwritten by Celebi Chiropractic. Celebi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. So long until next time. If you've got any comments or questions, call me or call the station at 919-832-5138. Have a good week.